Good morning. Cohen has been wanting to help me preach. And so I told him today was his day. So he's going to help us this morning. And thank you so much for being here. I should begin by saying, hola, mi amigos. Is that, Randall, where are you? Is that right? Good. This morning you're going to hear from our team. We've been back almost 2 weeks. And you're going to hear some of the experiences and some of the stories we have. Now, I want to warn you, if you didn't catch this already, that the service is going to go a little longer today. And, we try to be time conscious usually, and next week we'll be back to our normal same bat time, same bat channel. This is going to go a little longer, but I promise if you hang with us, it's going to be worth it, okay? And also, I think we have our K through 5 back here. Could you welcome our K through 5? And I think our students are in here as well. Yep. And just before, usually we have our whole team up here, but we have the largest team we've ever taken, so they wouldn't fit on the stage. Some of them couldn't be here, but let's have our team stand wherever you are in the room. If you're on our team, would you stand? And would you just give them a welcome as they come to share with us as well? So we don't want to waste any time, so we're going to begin talking about kind of our first full day. So I'm going to invite Lindsay and Nolan, if they would, just come on up, and we'll start. Now, I said I wouldn't waste any time, Nolan, but we've got to do this. This is very important. When we were in the Dominican, there was this one day where Nolan did something, and I thought it was the funniest thing. And you're not going to think it's funny at all, probably, and that's okay. This is for me. How many of you have seen the last Batman movie, The Dark Knight Rises? How many of you have seen that movie? Okay, those of you who've seen, what's wrong with the, okay, watch this movie. Good movie, but there's a character in that movie called Bane. How many of you have heard of Bane before? And he has a specific voice in that movie. And one day, we're just hanging out in the dorm. I forget what, like the lights had gone out, the power had gone out.
There we go. The lights went out, and for whatever reason, I just said, I was born in the dark, molded by it. And Josh loses it, and for the next 3 days, we only talked in our Bane voice.
I think it was the whole week, not just 3 days.
What? Oh, yeah, so one day, we're going to go eat. Tell them this one. This was the one that got me. This is the best one always.
We didn't tell this at 9 o'clock, but I don't...
This is bonus footage.
We were walking to eat, and we were doing our Bane voice all day, just different stuff, and I said, the fate of my belly getting full rests on me eating. And Josh then proceeds to laugh for, what is
45 minutes.
Yeah.
At least 45 minutes.
And that's no exaggeration at all.
No, it's not. It's not. That total, Carl looked at me at one point and said, this is really getting annoying. You, but I've been doing it since we've been home. You would be amazed at what you can do with music in that voice, too.
I like when the lights went out and you did outpour.
Yeah.
So that's that. That has nothing to do with
it. Has nothing to do with the rest of what we're going to share, but this is for you. So the very first full day, we flew in on Tuesday. We had a whole day of travel, of layovers, exhausting. First full day, we spent time in Romano's community where his church is called Conca Lorena. And we had some projects there. Lindsay, would you just begin by talking about the first project we had that day?
Our first project was to go to Conca, the community where Romano has his church. It's a Haitian community. And we were going to be painting a couple of houses. We painted one house the first half of the day and then another house the second part of the day, and they were members of Romano's church, so we were going to be helping his ministry by reaching out to the members of his church and also maybe reaching out to the non-members of his church so maybe they would come to his church. So that's what we were doing. That is a picture of the first house that we went to. That was a family of five. It was Denise, the mother, and her three small children. She had a 6-year-old, 4-year-old, and a 1-year-old living in that house. And then her husband, who was gone to work most of the time. I think he got to come home on weekends sometimes. But we arrived there, and we had to walk out to her house down this gravel road. And I was kind of getting nervous as we were going out there because I tried to prepare myself for the trip by kind of looking and doing a little research, kind of knowing the history of the island and things like that, but it didn't really prepare me at all. There's was just trash everywhere, old shoes, a desolate place. We walked down the gravel road, and then we came to these chicken houses. There's a picture of them on there somewhere, but these big chicken houses just full of chickens, and the smell was just overpowering. And then I realized when we get to the chicken houses that we've also reached our destination. We're at Denise's house, which is directly next to the chicken houses, like pretty much joining the chicken houses. And it was mind-blowing to see where she lived. But she, just her response to us and how excited and eager she was waiting for us to come visit her and her kids just running and jumping in our arms, I think that was one of the most memorable parts of the trip. I think whenever I look back on the trip, her smiling face is probably what I see first. And I've just never felt that much love. I think the only way to describe it would be to call it Christ-like. But she really impacted me, and I think everybody else deeply. But anyways, we spent about 2.5 hours painting her house inside and out. The whole time her kids were working diligently next to us, a 6- and 4-year-old painting for 2.5 hours. Like, it was amazing to see them work like that. But that's what we did, and she was so thrilled. She was so, so happy, just her dignity and how proud she was of her house. And I said last service, I was thinking when we got there and when we started, I just kind of felt silly. I was like, why are we painting this house? We need to tear it down and build a new one. That would really be what would help her. But then I realized later, especially after Jeff spoke to us, that really wasn't the point. You know, it wasn't about us bringing American standards to the Dominican. It was about giving her something to be proud of and helping her and send, you know, the message to that community, something powerful, showing them God's kingdom, because in no other situation would you see privileged Americans working for Haitians, who are the bottom of the bottom. The oppression that they face, seeing that was so impactful. I'll never forget it. And then,
so could you talk a little bit about what Denise's house was like?
Yeah, well, it was about this half the size of this stage here that we're on. There was about a full-size mattress and box spring. It was propped up on 5-gallon buckets. Actually, we were going to need to move the bed so we could paint the rest of the side of the house. So that was a task in itself, because you could tell it took so much for her to just get it propped up so they could sleep on it. And there was a table, I think maybe one light bulb. A lot of the people there kind of just make their own electric wires so they can get a little bit of electricity. But I think she had one light bulb. And she actually did have a TV, but I don't really think it worked. And that's about all they had. They had a pack and play for the baby outside. And that was about it. In the house.
That's what Nolan did all week, by the way. Randomly stand around for pictures like that.
They were all working, and I was supervising, making sure everything was going well.
Do you want to talk about what the house was made of?
The house was made of, like, sheet metal and any wood they could find, cardboard. They even had cardboard on the sides of their houses, and that's what her house was made of. And the craziest thing was the fact that she was living in that small of a house. She had, a mattress and a table, and that was it. And then we saw her at church that Sunday, and she's jumping up and down. She's real happy. She has her kids. Her kids are jumping up and down. They're hugging everybody. And you're thinking, how can somebody that has that kind of house and lives in that environment be as happy as they were?
And I think something important to mention, too, is this was a working family. This was a family where dad was away working all the time. He didn't get to spend a whole lot of time with his family, just trying to provide for them. And then Denise also worked. They didn't own the house that they lived in. It was on a chicken farm. And in exchange for them watching over the chickens and staying there, they could live in the shed that was their house. And that was just wild to see. You know, that's comparing two working parents, a household here compared to there. And that was the norm. That wasn't really the worst. I think they were about average, I would say, especially in that community out in the rural area that we were in. And then the second part of the day, we painted a different house. And that house I know when we walked up to it, I was like, well, this one isn't nearly as bad because it was quite a bit bigger. It had a porch, and it was enclosed a little bit better. There wasn't as many, like, cracks where you could see through it. But come to find out, it was actually an apartment complex, and there was probably 20 people that lived inside, like three different apartments. And one of the apartments were a family who actually were members of Romano's church, but the other ones weren't. And we had a big crowd of people gawking and staring at us the whole time we were there. I mean, I think they were in awe. It was something entertaining to see these Americans painting a house out in their community.
And Jeff, he even prepared us for that. They're not going to understand why you guys from America are here painting the homes of Haitian people, mm-hmm. who are economically, socially, politically the bottom rung of the ladder.
Right.
The ladder's on top of them.
The symbolism behind what we were doing was much more impactful than just us actually painting the houses, just the message that it was sending to them. So that was amazing to just be able to experience that. I think going there and doing what we did was, I don't know, I never felt like I was doing something more right, I think, than that week.
Here are the chickens, the little baby chicks that they died. Somebody had died them and let them run loose in the sewer ditch.
Now, there's chickens everywhere, wild chickens running around everywhere. We actually seen a guy giving one of his chickens a bath at one point. He was, yeah. But
Braveheart.
Yeah.
There's our crew.
Yeah, that's the apartment complex we painted blue.
Yeah, so there's a door on the left, where the middle section there's a door, and then there's a door on the right, or your left. Three different places, lots of people in each place, lucky to have a roof over their heads that probably leaks a bit, I would say.
Right, yeah. And the smell, that's not captured in the pictures, but the smell, the whole time we were there pretty much, some places were worse than the other, but it was, I don't know, I've never smelt anything like that.
I can't even smell good, and I could smell it. It was bad.
And trash was just everywhere. Everywhere we went. I mean, it was beautiful countryside, but just the amount of trash and waste that was everywhere. I mean, one of the places we'll talk about later was an actual dump site where 500 families lived in the dump. So that was, it was wild.
And some of the reason for that is, A, when you're scraping by just to survive, recycling is a good thing. We should all do it. But in some ways, that's a luxury of the affluent who have time to worry about sorting paper and plastic, right? And then also, their garbage collection, sometimes they would pick it up, and sometimes they would be on strike because they weren't getting paid, and so you would have 2 months where nobody came to pick up your garbage. So it wasn't even sometimes their choice. It was just okay. No flag dancing up here right now, okay. So anything else you guys want to add about your first?
Well, there is. We were wanting to show the beach race video while we were up here, Josh. So if we could get that to play. Can you explain that?
Yeah, here it is. Now, as I seek to reclaim my dignity, Nolan tripped me. It was dirty, it was underhanded, it was cheating. Can we show the next picture, though? Let's put the next picture up. We don't need to see this again.
Yes, yep, let's see it again.
Okay. We raced again, and look who's in last place, Nolan.
I had to let him win. I mean, his confidence was really low. His face went into the sand. I had to let him win.
I had my entire mouth was full of sand. It was terrible.
He claims that I tripped him, but when you lean into a guy when you're running, instincts say you're going to shove him in the dirt. Sand in this situation.
It literally took Josh about 5 minutes to get up.
It was a struggle. Let's thank Nolan and Lindsay for sharing this morning. I want to invite Kelsey and Hannah, who we also call Hank because she eats like a teenage boy, to come on up. Hey, Hank. How are you? We did a couple what they call field days while we were there. It was on, Thursday and Saturday, we did field days, I think. And basically, it was just playing with kids, and we did it in the whole and in Romano's community as well. Hey, can you help me out here real quick? Hey, go play with that over there, okay? So could we talk a little bit about, let's talk a little bit about the first one, which was in the hole, and we've got the picture queued up here. I think, let's go back one, Jason. There you go. All right, let's talk a little bit about the hole.
These are the stairs going down into the hole. And for the field day, we had all kinds of activities to do. We had all kinds of jump ropes and chalk and what else do we have? I can't even think straight.
Bubbles.
We had bubbles.
A basketball.
And a basketball, yeah.
And they had a basketball court there.
But they didn't have the ball. So they were very, very excited about having a ball to actually play with.
I think it meant more to the kids. Well, it meant a lot to us, but it meant more to the kids that we were just coming there to play with them. And we were talking before this service. We were trying to figure out what we were going to say because we completely bombed 9 o'clock. Just saying. We completely bombed it.
Take it from a guy who's bombed 9 o'clock many times.
But we were trying to figure out what to say. And the toys or the things that we brought them are just from the dollar store. We were told to bring, like, what, $10 each of stuff. And so it was just bubbles and jump ropes and stuff like that. And, like, for kids here, it's just, it's not, like, it would keep them occupied for, like, 5 minutes. But the kids there, it's just, like, it's like Christmas morning seeing all of this stuff that they get to play with. So it meant a lot to them, and it meant a lot to us, too. We can't really, I mean, yeah.
And it was me and Caitlin and Sarah Beth, and we were doing the chalk. And I was sitting there, and I was drawing on the sidewalk, and this little boy comes up to me. He was about maybe 6 or 7, and I can't remember his name. I really wish I could, but it's killing me. But he told me to write my name down. And so I wrote my name down, and then he wrote his name down, and then he told me to write his name down right under mine. So that's what I did. And he drew a heart around mine and his name. So it was cute.
This is a great picture. The hole is built on what used to be a garbage dump, and people basically realized they could live there tax-free, and so they started creating homes there. Across, there's a river that runs through it, and it's basically sewage, and there are these really massive pigs that play in it that are owned by local drug dealers. And you can see behind us here, this is the worst housing in the hole. I mean, it's barely standing up. It's just clapboard. When it rains, this is no protection. This is no protection from the elements. This is just where lots and lots of people call home. And you don't go to the hole. They would never take us there at night because drug dealing and prostitution are rampant. And that's how people survive day to day in the hole. They're actually the kids. It's amazing, isn't it? The parents will just let their kids go with you. And we walked probably a mile around the hole, maybe, or more. And they just, like, go, take our kids. Because the kids know that there are certain places they don't go because there are alleys. If you go down, you don't come back. And so the kids live with this very real reality. If we go down the wrong street, we'll never see mom and dad again. If we have mom and dad or mom or grandma or aunt or whoever we're living with, we won't see them again because what you'll hear more about later is that the Dominican Republic ranks 4th on the human trafficking in the world. So lots and lots of women and children disappear and are taken maybe to other parts of the world where they're sold as in the sex trade or other sorts of things. So this is reality for them. The alleyway down the block literally might spell the end of your life as you know it, which is very, very hard for us to understand. You want to talk a little bit about the field day in Conca?
Conca is where we go to church, which is where, like, we go to church, to Romano's church. Okay. Let me start over.
Oh, can I back up real quick? Talk about the feeding center. Because we didn't talk about the feeding center.
Okay. In the hole, there's a feeding center. And that's a nice little picture.
That's a great picture.
Okay. I know it's an awful picture of me, but can we just point out Rachel?
Who's not here to defend herself this morning.
Okay. In the feeding center, okay, all the kids from the hole, or some of the kids from the hole, come in and they get one meal a day. And they put a vitamin in the food because they're, you know, whatever.
That's all they get.
Yeah, that's all they get. And so I just lost what I was going to say.
So we fed them.
We fed them, and the little ones, thank you, the little ones get the bowls, and the big ones get the plate, or the big kids get the plates.
And
what would often happen is, so you have these little kids, and they get this little bowl of rice, and there's really just a couple bits of chicken in it. And the big kids get a bigger bowl of rice and little bits of chicken. And essentially, the little kids will look at you and go, because they want you to bring them a full plate. And so you're having to tell these little kids, no, all you get is a bowl. The plate is for... And so sometimes you'd have the brother or sister sharing from their plate with their little brother or sister who has the bowl. And it's just you just want to keep giving them food, but they have so much. And it has they get 6 days a week, one meal a day. And that's all they're promised. This is a great shot down one of the alleys. And that's garbage dump landfill in the background. And you can you want to talk about Konka?
Okay. What I was trying to get across earlier is Konka is where Romano's church is planted. So it's we call it Romano's community. And so we went Saturday?
I think so.
Saturday, we had a field day there. And we had just the same dollar store stuff that we brought to the hole. And it meant to as much to the kids in the hole as it did in Konka. And I know it doesn't sound like much, like we're just blowing bubbles with them or we're throwing frisbee with them. But us as a team can't explain to you what that meant to us.
It's impossible.
Yeah. We can't explain what it meant to us because
it's breathtaking to be down there and see how little those kids have and how happy they are when we come and we don't even really I mean, we think of ourselves like we're not anything special, but to them it's indescribable. It really is.
It's Randall's buddy. They made friends. Anything else you guys want to share about the day in Konka?
And that's Romano's godson, Samuel.
We met him last year. He was 17 days old.
Yeah.
And that's him now. That's Denise. Denise, whose house we painted, that's her son, her youngest. Anything else, ladies?
I don't believe so.
Oh, yeah, let's get to that. Talk a little bit about that.
What? Okay. Kelsey Houston, Rachel Johnson, and myself all sponsor a Go Kid together, and we give $30 a month to her name's Hazy, and she's 6 years old, and we got to meet her while we were down there. The $30 that we give her, it helps her, like, get her, it supplies her school stuff, like her books and everything, and notebooks, and just that stuff, but she gets a present at Christmas and birthday. And we got to meet her. That meant a lot, too. They send two pictures a year, and we were really excited about meeting her, but we didn't know what to expect. Like, there was a chance that she wasn't even going to, you know, get to come. Like, that was a possibility. So when she showed up, we were all three really excited. You'd think with the three of us, if you ever met us, that we would have plenty to say. It was hard. We struggled a lot because we didn't know what to say. We were speechless. We thought about this girl. We've seen her for a whole year, but we met her, and it was awesome.
Yeah, this is Crystal here and her Go Kid Elvis. So when he left, we could actually say Elvis has left the building, and that was a great joy for us. Thank you, ladies, so much. Thank you. I want to invite Amanda and Sarah Beth, if you guys would come up. We're going to talk about some other stuff we did in the hole and in Konka as well. Now, Sarah Beth, she's from Scottsville. So she joined us on the trip this year, her and her friend Caitlin. You're related to Crystal.
Yes, I'm Crystal's cousin.
She's Crystal's cousin. And Sarah Beth, if you never have had the chance to meet Sarah Beth or just hear a story of Sarah Beth's, she is a good time. So you need to get to know her. She's hilarious. But let me start with you, Sarah Beth. So we spent a day in the hole and in Konka, and part of what we did the afternoons in those places was walk around with local leaders and local church members and just talk to people and pray with people. What was that like for you?
It was
was probably one of the most spiritual, besides church Sunday, it was one of the most spiritual moments that I've ever had. What we did was at the, there's not pictures.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We already went through them.
We were at the hole, and everybody got into groups of four of us from the mission team, and we got a church member and a translator. And we went down an alleyway. And we stopped at a house. And one of the houses we stopped at, we was inviting them to church. And then we always asked, do you want us to pray with you? Well, Amanda would pray with them because everybody said she had the spirit coming out of her. You know, she had a really strong touch to all the people, it seemed. Like, everybody was drawn to Amanda when we was talking to them. Do you want to tell your story?
It was weird, and we couldn't talk about it for a long time after it happened. We would go 3-4 days, and finally I looked at Sarah Beth and I was like, did you think that was strange what happened? And she was like, yeah, I just can't talk about that. But we're finally where we can. I prayed at four houses, and Caitlin prayed at four houses, and it just seemed like our group, it was like we could all feel the Holy Spirit just really moving. And we all really wanted to help these people. And one thing I really appreciated about the whole was that, you know, we would go to Konka and we would go to other places, and it would seem as though in the whole, even though they live in a dump, they take more pride in where they live, and they were more... they received us better than any other place, we thought. So we went into one house, and the woman asked if we could pray for her. So she had some leg issues, some circulation issues. And I knelt in front of her, and I put my hands on her leg. And I had been praying the Lord's Prayer for several months now, every day. And it's like God took those words and embellished them and changed them where they meant something to her. And by the time we left, we didn't know what had happened, but everybody was touched. And it was probably the best thing I've ever felt.
So would you say that even though there was a language barrier, there was really not a language barrier?
Yes.
Exactly, yes. It's hard to explain. I can't explain anything that happened down there. You have to be there to experience, because it's more of a feeling than anything. Even though we couldn't speak Spanish, we tried really hard. It didn't matter. Like, I tried to speak Spanish to them.
You should give them examples of how you tried to speak Spanish.
Yeah, say a Spanish word for us, Sarah Beth. Please. Enlighten us.
Go. What was one of the
Olaf.
Well, we had to go to this La Serena, which is a Walmart.
Say casa. Please say casa.
Casa?
Oh, no, you're saying it right now.
How did I...
You were saying like casa.
Lindsay, you're the one. Well, okay, I remember in high school, they taught me how to say home in Spanish, so I would kept telling everybody, la casa. And obviously that was wrong.
They didn't know what she was talking about. Denise's kids were looking at her like... What? I don't know what you're saying.
I speak Spanglish. We had bathroom problems. We couldn't get to the bathroom. Nobody understood when I went baño. Bathroom it. It was a... But like we said, when we were sitting there praying with them, I spoke English. I didn't speak Spanish. We had a translator, and I hope she was saying what we were saying. But it didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter at all. Like, it's just, like, you knew that the love of God was there. And that's all that mattered. That's really all that mattered the whole time we were down there with the kids. And like Josh said, I had a little girl. I named her Maria. I don't know her name. But little Maria followed me. She followed me around the whole time we were evangelizing for hours. Like, it was an hour, I would say. Never seen a mom, a dad, or nothing. She just went down. We went down the main road, down another alley, like, and this little girl just stuck on my hip the whole entire time. Like, if that was my kid, it would be a different story here in America. But there, they didn't care. They trust us with them all. I guess that's what it is.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't tell in the first service, can I tell it? we went back to the church after we were done with evangelism in the hall, and a man walked up to me, and I was like, hola, ¿cómo estás? And he was like, I speak English. He proceeded to tell me his name was Bernard, and he was from Maine, but he had moved to California. And I was like, why are you in the hole? And he went on to tell me that he was escaping justice by living there because he had committed murder in the United States. And when I said, do you really feel like this is better than what it would be if you went home and you, because the conditions are deplorable. And he was like, yeah, I just want to be free. So we got back to the house, and later on I was talking about it, and you know Rocky's the jailer. So Rocky's sitting there going, Bernard from California. I think I could find him.
Thank you, ladies, so much. Thank you. Go Ministries has started a seminary to train indigenous local leaders in the Bible and those sorts of things. And we had a chance to visit there and do some work on the seminary. We did some painting and some construction of a classroom. So I'm going to invite Amy and Papa Randall, as he's affectionately called, to come on up and share with us. Yes. It is totally appropriate to woo at the name of Papa Randall. Have a seat. So this is a picture of the seminary on the outside. It's in the bottom floor. Is it just the bottom floor? Is that right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, Amy, this was, you've been there before on a visit, but this was your first work trip. Randall, you went last year, so you're one of the veterans. Yes. But can we just talk a little bit about what was our project there? Either one of you, whoever.
Well, the seminary started, like Josh said, about 6 months ago, I think, ago.
I think it's around that time.
Yeah, around that time. And they got a place right next to Jeff and Vicky, which, if you guys don't know Jeff and Vicky, it's Jeff and Vicky Rogers. They're from Louisville, and they actually met here at MCC years ago. It's actually right next to their home. The place where they're having the classes is probably as small as my daughter's bedroom. It's pretty small. And I think they had like 26 kids. Was it 26 or something, I think they said?
Yeah, it's a good number.
It's a good number of kids in that room, or seminary students. What they're doing is they're trying to bring people that are coming up in some of these churches and get them more schooled in being a pastor, so they can go out and make a bigger effect in their community. Like I said, we toured the facility, and it was basically a home, and you're using that bedroom as that, but so they wanted a little bit more room, so in the back they built like a gazebo, or had the building started like a gazebo. As you see, the roof was made of palm tree fronds, and that kept it kept the rain out that way, and our job for that day was to box it in. So I got to work with the Porter girls that day, Lindsay and Casey. And I tell you what, Donna Porter, you're doing a great job with them girls. They work hard. And but basically what they do is we took this wood, and it's basically the bark of the tree, a quarter-inch piece of that bark of the tree. It may be 4 inches on one end, 2 inches in the center, you know, 3 inches on the other end. And basically you have to make that fit. And that was our job for the day, and like I said, it ended up with a lot of banged knuckles. I'm used to that as being as a mechanic, but it was a different kind of ouch when you hit it with a hammer. So.
We had some blood.
Yeah, there was blood. There was plenty of blood. Yeah.
Lots of Band-Aids used.
There's the finished product. They hung a whiteboard for Jeff. This is going to be Jeff's classroom where he's going to teach. And then here's a couple pictures of our team, maybe. There's a crew also painting on the inside. I think this is the crew who worked on the outside. We took a silly picture at the end.
Yeah.
Together.
I think that was the hardest day we worked. And I think the biggest thing is we, as a team, there's 18 of us, all different personalities, and let me tell you, when I say a lot of personalities, we got a lot of personality in our group. But and good, though. And we all gelled together that day and worked hard together, and you could see the rest of the week we just kind of worked towards you know, that. And it was a great day. It was one of my favorite days.
Yeah. Amy, could you talk a little bit about that night we went to Romano's house for dinner? Would you talk a little bit about what that was like?
We all gathered at Romano's house down the road. They brought food. We had cooks all week cooking for us. So we all were asking Romano what he was cooking for dinner that night. And he kept saying pizza. Well, we didn't have pizza that night, but we did a different night. But so we gathered around and shared and got to visit. And Jeff got to talk about Romano and his ministry, working with what we would consider upward bound, like basketball. He has the upward soccer and his team. I think somebody might talk a little bit later about UNO that you all help sponsor with soccer balls and things like that. But so we, so Jeff is very proud of Romano and what he does in his ministry with the Haitians. Romano, if you all have not had an opportunity to meet him, is a very unique person for being so young. He speaks five languages. So he'll be talking on the phone, and 1 minute it's English, and the next minute it's Spanish, and then it's Creole. So, but we had an opportunity to gather in this room and pray over Romano and his ministry that he's doing in the Haitian community and also with his soccer program. And with the soccer program, it brings a unique group of young men together, not only on the field to pray and be unique, but to go to church and help be responsible and things of that nature was pretty cool. So it was a good evening. So, yeah.
Yeah. Spending time with Romano is always just it's the best, isn't it?
Yeah. He's a pretty cool dude. So
thank you guys so much. Will you give them a hand? On Sunday, we had a full day on Sunday, and you'll hear about several things we did, but we began the morning at church in Conca La Reina with Romano. So I'm going to invite Casey and Caitlin, if they would, just to come on up. Welcome them. That happens to me all the time. So let's talk a little bit about that that Sunday morning. What was that like for you, being in a church where they spoke a totally different language?
It was really exciting because as soon as we got there, they were already worshiping and singing, and it was very different because we were in a small room and it was very hot, but they didn't care about that at all. They were just up dancing and singing and happy, and we got to see Denise and her kids and some of the other kids that we'd seen in the community that week. It was our third day there in Conca, and it was just really special to see all of them so happy and excited about church whenever they had such little compared to us. And, you know, they appreciated it so much, just being at church that Sunday and being together.
I asked Romano, what time do we need to be there for church? And he said, we're not like you guys. We start and you just show up. So there was like, they started, and when we came, then it was time to do the part we were there to be a part of. But they kind of just, it's really a 2 hour or more experience in the heat. I mean, it was really hot, wasn't it? It was unbelievably hot.
Yeah.
And while we were there, you'll see a picture of this, I think, maybe next. It was Casey's birthday while we were there. And Romano, tell them about what Romano did during the church service. And
well, I really didn't want anybody to do anything for my birthday because we weren't there. It wasn't about me at all. But I was completely surprised that morning. Romano asked me to come up in front of the church in the very beginning of the service. And I didn't know what he was going to do. So I was pretty shocked, and he asked all of the people there to sing happy birthday to me, and they sang to me in Creole, and then the mission team sang too, so it was pretty cool. And then he proceeded to pray for me over everybody and bless my life and everything, and it was just really sweet, and I was really shocked.
What was being at church that day like for you, Caitlin?
I didn't know what to expect going into it, but I was so excited. I had anticipated church all week because I knew it was going to be an experience like I'd never seen before. And before we got out of the van, Jeff said the only way to describe it is it's just beautiful. And that really is the only way to describe it. Not for what you see. I mean, obviously, you know, it's not a fancy church. There's just windows with a little, I mean, like wood slats. You get a little air, and it was so hot. It was so hot. But just seeing how we had been in Conca, that was our third day there, and we had seen the people that were there, and we had seen them in their everyday clothes. And, I mean, you saw pictures of Denise's kids. Their clothes are dirty, and they're just, they don't have anything, and they were in their Sunday best. As soon as I walked in, the little girls were in frilly dresses, and everyone was jumping up and down and singing, and it was so beautiful. And we had no clue what they were saying because it was Creole, so it wasn't like Spanish where we could pick up a few words here and there. We had no clue, but the first thing we sat down, and they started singing, which they have the drums, and we picked up. They were singing "How Great Thou Art," and we all picked up, and I noticed, I looked around, and everyone was sitting there, and of course, they were singing different words than us, but we were all singing, and it was just an instant connection. And, I mean, I immediately just started crying just thinking about how we were so far away from home, and that song is something that, even though it was different words, we all knew what it was, and it was just really amazing to see how they worship, and it really put things into perspective for me. Is they don't have anything, and they were so happy, and you could just see the joy of the Lord in their lives, and it just made me think, all I have, and do I give enough? Do I worship enough? And seeing how they did, and I felt like I do so little, and it was just an amazing experience, and they were so happy. There was not a single person down there that ever made me feel uncomfortable. They were so welcoming, and they really had the joy of God in their hearts, you could tell.
Well, there's a line in one of the Corinthian letters Paul writes, and he talks about they have nothing, but they possess everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great way to describe what church was like in Conca. They compared to us, and there's no lights, there's no air conditioning, there's, you know, no, you know, all the stuff we go into, but they have it all.
I told Sarah Beth the last day, you know, my phone got messed up in the ocean. And, of course, I mean, I started to stress out, and I started complaining, and then I thought, this whole week, I have seen people, I mean, struggle to find food, you know, and it was one of those things where if I had been back home, I would have been so worried about that. And then suddenly these little things that I complain over, it's nothing. Because every time something happens, I think about those kids, and I think about Denise's family, and I think about, it just puts things into perspective. It really does. It makes you so thankful for the things that we have.
Well, we also went to the soccer game. I thought I had some pictures of that, but I don't seem to find them. But I think it's the one back. Yeah.
Yeah. This is our view for part of our group because the church was so small and it was hot and sweaty. And me and Lindsay were actually in the front of that room so we could just see out the doorway. And basically all I could see was Denise because she got up and was singing and dancing and stuff. And I just, the whole time I was in church, I just admired Denise. And I just, she touched me because she was just so happy, and I was really sad to leave because it was just bittersweet that day at church because it was our last day in the community with all those people because we were going to the beach the next day, and it was just really sad because we didn't want to leave. I wish we could have stayed at church longer with them and celebrated. But
can you tell them about the soccer game? What was it? You remember what the field was like? And
well, I don't know much about soccer.
Well, there it is.
But there's Romano in the blue. And we all accidentally wore yellow shirts, which was the other team. But the soccer field was actually an old, old baseball field. And so it was kind of wide and short for a soccer field. So it was really hard for them to play on. But they did the best with what they could. And they ended up scoring 0-0. But it was fun to watch.
The goals were made out of, like, PVC pipe.
Yeah.
There was
no
net.
Netting. And these are bleachers to them, I guess. Which
they would sit on
the tires.
Yeah.
But we stood up the whole time, but we enjoyed ourselves, and we played with the kids while we were at the soccer game, and it was just really fun to see his team play. And, I mean, there was no, you know, fights or anything. I mean, they all got along really well, and
I remember there was one little boy, the one that sticks out in my mind. We were sitting there, and he had, I'm assuming their clothes, you know, were donated, and he had on a little pair of Wranglers, and they were too big for him, and they kept falling down, and his toy was a stick with a piece of a plastic sack tied to the end of it. And throughout the whole game, like, I couldn't even concentrate on the game because he would just run up and down, his little pants would fall down, and he just played with that stick in a plastic sack. And I just remember, like, he got so much joy out of that stick and a paper sack. Like, it was so, I mean, just fun to watch, and he just was so happy.
He was also playing on a barbed wire fence, too.
And then after that, we got to have pizza with the soccer team, and that was a really, really great experience as well. Anything else, ladies? Can we thank Casey and Caitlin? And finally, on Sunday, in between church and the soccer game, we got to tour the school. The medical complex, and the leadership development complex. So I'm going to invite Carla and Crystal up to talk a little bit about that, if they would.
Crystal and I were rushed last service, so I made a list of the high points that I need to cover. Josh kept going.
I'm not
going
to. These people have nowhere else
concentrate.
To be. This is it. So. They're not going anywhere.
Do y'all have any plans before 2? No, I'm joking. You all didn't think that was funny. Okay.
You're running out of time.
This picture that's behind me is a picture of Diane. She is the administrator for the GO schools. And she is standing in their gym/common area. Josh had told me that last year when they came here, this was pretty much non-existent. It was open. Go ahead and go to the next one. But they've made it... I don't know if you saw or not, but half of the wall was block and the other half was open. It had chain link fence. A lot of the architecture there allows for openness because it is so hot. It is very, very hot. This is one of the classrooms. They have student desk, teacher desk, a chalkboard, and if you're lucky, you get a ceiling fan. And everything's concrete, so that's pretty much it. That's a picture of one of the hallways. They use a lot of metal as far as there's always bars on the windows. There's always a big metal door on the houses. When I went to the school, I actually got to see the school whenever they were working on the seminary because they had me and Crystal and who else went with us to go get books? Lindsay and Sarah Beth. It was Amanda and Sarah Beth. So we all went to the school to move books. And we rode in on the back of this little truck. And if you've ever been to the Dominican, we were very brave to volunteer to do that.
There are no traffic rules.
You can run stoplights. As long as your horn works, don't worry about brake lights or anything like that. Just you need your horn because you want to tell people to get out of your way when you're coming through. That's it. But anyway, this is their hallways are open. And the first thing that I thought about was, in our school systems, we have such an elaborate process for visitors to come in. You have to check in at the front. We metal detect our students. If someone really wanted to, they could stand outside the school and shoot directly at kids if they wanted to, like I said. They had about 15 classrooms for about 600 students. Now, the students were broken up into 2 half-day sessions. In the Dominican right now, they have a 7:30 to 11:30 session, and then they have a 2 o'clock to a 6 o'clock session. And I asked, do you have the same teachers all day? And they said yes. So teachers get there probably at about 7, or if not, if you're, you know, need planning, then you probably get there earlier and don't leave until after 6 o'clock that night. The students do not get a meal while they're there. Diane said that when she first came on with the GO school, she asked the teachers what they would like, what's something she could do for them, and they said they wanted Ensure. And she asked them, why do you want Ensure? And they wanted it to give to their students because their students were having difficulty focusing due to malnutrition and hunger. And I'll go to my little notes. In the Dominican is the 4th nation in human trafficking. About 25% of registered Dominicans go to school. Now, that's not counting people who are there in the country illegal. And we learned while we were there of a little boy who was left. He was a Haitian boy who, as an infant, was left on church steps. And when you're born, even if you're born in the Dominican Republic, that does not make you a citizen. You have to, actually the lady who found him is fighting, going back to Haiti to try and get Haiti to recognize him as a citizen so that she can adopt this little boy. And this has been going on for about 3 years. And she's also the doctor at the medical clinic that Crystal's going to talk to you about in just a minute. I may have said there were 15 clubs. Yeah, I did. Now, the president of the Dominican, he's new, and he's trying to bring about a lot of changes. When he came into office, they were about 15,000 classrooms, not teachers or anything, but classrooms short, to meet the educational needs of the registered Dominican kids. Now that's gone down to, I think they said, about 7,000. But he's also wanting to make the school, instead of half-day sessions, make it a full-day sessions, which as a teacher, I'm like, yay, great, more education. But if you use your common sense and think about it, this school that serves 600 kids, they couldn't have all 600 the full day. So that would they would have to turn away about 300 of their kids. And what Crystal and the Kelseys and Rachel, when they sponsor their Go Kid, that $30 pays for their, well, it helps pay teacher salaries for one. It also pays for materials such as pencils and school books. And Diane also said that she had gone to a public school and you're required to get about 8 books, and the amount of pesos it took to buy those books, no one could afford it.
Because they're not provided.
No, they're not provided. The teacher and one other student had books when she went to go visit the public school. And also another thing, I may have said they don't serve meals at the school, but another thing that struck me is that there is no special education at all. If you're disabled, you do not get an education. You stay at home. Vicky's girls both have cochlear implants, and they're going to one school where they're getting services, and it's a school basically that the wealthy go to, the hotel owners and things of that nature. And people are bragging to Vicky, basically saying that she's a pioneer for sending her kids who in the United States, for those of you who are in the education system, they would probably get a 504. They would not qualify for special education here because they do so well. But they're like amazed that these kids are getting to be educated. I'll let you talk about the medical. I have some miscellaneous notes that have.
And I think one of the main things that Diane and the administrators of the Go School ask for us to pray for is the capability to be able to expand their school system. And that's what they're wanting to do. There's a place right behind the Go Clinic that they have right now that they're wanting to build more classrooms, to be able to even have high school students there, and to also build a cafeteria so that if they, at the time that they do go to a full-time school, they will be able to feed them at this cafeteria. So the Go Clinic is such a powerful experience in the Dominican on the street. You know, they have a doctor there. I don't think she's there every single day, or if she is, it's not, it's just a few hours a day. But
This is Dolores
Norman that is over the medical part of Go Ministries, and she is such a wonderful woman. She actually helped me out during the week as I had some issues with sleeping, being on the street and all the noise and everything. And don't ever go to the Dominican without your Tylenol PM, please. But she helped, yes, and she helped us throughout the week. But this is actually the clinic that our team 2 years ago was able to help lay the foundation and put rocks down. And it's such a privilege to be able to see the change that's been made just in the past 2 years. Of course, if you were in America, this would have already been completed and be running up, 100%. But, you know, they can only do with the resources that they have. And they use the teams every week to be able to come in and do what is needed on this. I hate it that we didn't get to work on the clinic, but it's still such a privilege to be a part of MCC and to know how much has been done and what a beacon that this is going to be for this community when it is complete, and to be able to go there and seek treatment and to have surgery and not have to go somewhere else or do without. And it is a true privilege, and Go Ministries are doing phenomenal things in Santiago and in Dominican and Haiti. This is the top of the clinic that they have right now, and as you can see, these are bottles, big bottles of medication and prescription drugs that people like you and I donate to send down there with teams. They have medical teams that travel to Haiti and the Bates and different parts to do medical ministry, and to be able to, they have dental ministry to come in and different things. But they were actually short just not very long ago, but they were able to start a ministry. I forget what the name of it is. If you go on Go Ministries website, you can give to the medical part of it, just to be, if you want to give money, they will get prescriptions and different things down there for all the people that are in need. But this is where they store it right now. So this is basically a three-room clinic. There's the room where you walk into, the room where the doctor sees you, which is not even the size of this stage. And it's got a bed for you to lay down on, and then a doctor's desk and a chair. And then upstairs is where they have the prescription. So when this clinic is finally finished, it will be a blessing. And the one that they have right now, when they move into the new clinic, that will become part of the school. So they will be able to do more classrooms. So, do you want me to talk about the leadership?
Talk about the medicine, like how much it costs.
Oh, the cost of, you all know that here we can get Advil, we can get Tylenol, and we can get it by the hundreds in bottles. But when you go into the clinic just to see the doctor, they ask for you to pay 50 pesos, which is just a little over a dollar. Now, you're not required. You don't have to pay that, but if you have it, that just helps them to get medicine and help the doctors and everything. But it's such a privilege to be able to have this clinic here in this community, to pay so little just to be able to see, you know, or treat you for fever. And they will either help them out, or they'll give them a prescription to go to a pharmacy for the low income to be able to get what they need and the help that they deserve. So it is a true blessing. I'd like to also talk about the Leadership Development Complex.